Okay, so stop your stobbing. Just stop stobbing now. Anyway, moving on, as we remind folk that you've got a quartet of quality still in the studio, because Hannah Brown hasn't left as yet. Still sticking there. Very good. Tessa Snott is with us. Natasha Armstrong is with us. And so is Kaylee Umphraville. And now we actually consider an incurable champion of ordinary people. An incurable champion of ordinary people. A folk singer, a Renaissance man with a questing, inquisitive spirit. Scouse singer-songwriter, a thinker, a rebel, a catalyst, a creator. It can only be Alan Parry. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Lovely introduction. Thanks very much.
Well, you know, we're looking at the whole wondrousness of delights and various other bits and pieces. But we were interested. A socially conscious songwriter. Does that make you like a balladeer for the 21st century? Is it a case of, you know, clearly you're going to be writing 30 Things to Love About Donald Trump in the very near future? Or are you thinking of something completely different?
Yeah, well, if I write anything about Donald Trump, it probably won't be with affection in mind. socially conscious storytelling songwriter basically means that I write stories and song about our experiences, really. And I've often got something to say, so there's a little bit of social comment in there as well. But I basically shine the spotlight on what life is like for us, and I normally do it in a kind of rousing and uplifting and slightly defiant way as well.
Indie folk meets Americana on the way to a picket line, as it says on parrysongs.co.uk. It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's a fair enough description, I think.
I've got to ask you though, Alan, the road that you're standing beside with your guitar in hand looks remarkably like the road that you take into Blackpool. I suspect it isn't. Whereabouts in the world is that road?
Well, this is in Liverpool, actually. So this is, you're talking about the front cover of my album, basically, that's coming out. But that was in a part of Liverpool called Garston, and it was just by the RSPCA building. So it looked actually during the photo shoot, it looked like people were stopping for me, but in fact, they were just taking their cat into the RSPCA.
And that's the kind of heart-wandering scenario that just we've come to know and appreciate in every sense of the word.
I feel like Liverpool artists just love their roads, the Beatles.
Abbey Road. That's, of course, in London. Penny Lane is in London.
Long and winding road, yeah.
The long and winding road, yeah. Exactly. It's Highway to Heaven. Oh, no, that was Michael Landon. So it goes. I think, Natasha, we're about ready to explore the first track from Freedom Rider, which you can, of course, pre-order. It's launching on March the 25th, 2017, this very year. So a sneak preview now. And really investigate the joys of Dig, Boys, Dig.
I think that sounds like a very good plan.
And I'm presuming, Alan, we're not really looking at this notion of dig as in the 60s sense of, dig, man, dig. You just don't dig it, man.
Well, I hope people dig it, but, it's about the life of a mine worker. True story as well.
Call me mum, man, or call me dad, father. He nods unspoken as I bring the coal. At 14 years old, I'm a boy and a miner. But this kind of labour, it sure takes its toll. Big boys dig for as far as you see. Every day is a fight with the cold. I'll tell you, the cold wins as often as me. Underground forge the deepest of friendships. The paths who are not but a voice in the dark. You'll never know trust till your life depends on it. But this kind of labor, it sure leaves its mark. my stick for the coal, it is stubborn. Dig my stick far as you see. Every day is a fight with the coal. I'll tell you, the coal wins as often as me. Now I look back on my life as a miner. The back-breaking soil in the heat down below. And we share the tears and the fears and the struggles. But this kind of labor is all that I know. Dig boys, dig for the coal, it is stubborn. Dig boys, dig far as you see. Every day is a fight with the coal. I'll tell you, the coal wins as often as me. Dig my stick for the coal, it is stubborn. Dig my stick far as you see. Every day is a fight with the coal. I'll tell you, the coal wins as often as me. Every day is a fight with the coal. I'll tell you, the coal wins as often as me.
I'll tell you, the coal wins as often as me. I think it deserves a round of applause.
Yay!
Let's find out what the team make of that wonderful Dig Boys Dig by Alan Parry. Hannah.
I really liked it. It was quite calm and relaxing. As we say, it was a bit different to what we were expecting, but I enjoyed it, yeah.
Okay. Tessa?
Oh, I thought that was really lovely. I could just listen to that all day.
Yeah. Natasha?
No, that was wonderful. That wasn't what I was expecting at all. It was almost reminded me of Over the Hills and Far Away from
yes,
the Sharp.
Yes, yeah.
Sharp.
Yeah. And Kaylee?
Yeah, I was going to say, I could see it in like an old-time movie, just yeah. being really calm and sweet.
I can hear almost Alan Ritson doing his folk special, thinking, oh, we must get Alan Parry on the programme. He's been sorting it out.
Yeah.
Oh, Alan's just behind me. There we are. Little play. He doesn't know. He's probably not even listening to the production. Alan Parry, it's outstanding. Well done. Is the rest of the album as good as that?
Well, I hope so. There's all different styles. That was kind of one of the gentler ones, and the track after that then gets kind of more, you know, foot stampy. So, yeah, there's a whole collection of songs which look at social history and a celebration of the human spirit, and a few love songs as well that just kind of explore all the weird, eccentric things we do when we're in love with somebody. So hopefully people will enjoy it.
In dark days like these, songs like Alan's are needed more than ever, and they shine like a beacon through the fog of lies, disinformation and propaganda to present a working-class view of reality. Great singer, great guitarist, great songwriter, and hugely entertaining in a live performance. That's Dick Gorn, folk legend. That's not a bad testimonial to actually have, Alan.
No, and it's great because Dick's a big hero of mine as well, and he's like you say, he's a legendary folk person as Dick Gocken. If anyone actually wants to see me live, I'll be up your way in Sutton-on-Trent, which I don't think is too far away from you, on the 1st of April.
It's East Coast. In fact, it's close to your area, Natasha, isn't it, really?
Sutton-on-Trent. We can go on a road trip.
Sounds good to me. I'm still bemused by the line, what's a micro gig and why am I doing lots on my tour? What's a micro gig, Alan?
Well, I go to stadium gigs and I find them really soulless. I don't know if anyone else has experienced this. The artist is like a pixel on the stage miles and miles away. And I thought, you know, I'd like to do something a bit different. So what I decided to do was have a series of gigs where we have the capacity limited to just 15 people. So you actually bring that real sort of connection and intimacy between the audience and the person who's there singing the song. So I'm doing a series of those around the country as well, so I'm looking forward to them. They should be really lovely, like front room parlour type gigs, even though they're not in anyone's front room.
Oh, you can fit a micro gig into the Siren Studios, couldn't we, really?
We could.
Accommodate that, given our Christmas star. We had 37 in here, so it's two micro gigs from that point of view. Kaylee, stadium gigs, does what Alan's been saying resonate with yourself in terms of just a teeny little pixel, basically? You can hardly see them.
Yes, I agree. I recently saw a band in Wembley, and I just thought that you kind of lose the feeling of it, but when you're really close up with the artist, you get, like, everything they're feeling, and you see the passion that they have, and I just love it.
Hannah?
I haven't been to too many gigs, but the last one I went to was Coldplay, and we were lucky enough to be at the front, so we could still see them as they were performing. But my friend, who was also at that one, she was seated somewhere else, and she got disappointed that she was slightly further away and concealed. But then the atmosphere sometimes helps with that of the audience, you know, something else to it.
It's interesting, Alan, you mentioned on your website that you read an interview with the late George Michael, and it seems the same sort of point was there. And what happened was George actually then started putting on gigs in social clubs for the nurses who'd helped his mother, and again got that alive and connected feel from that point of view. So, interesting.
That's right. The interview was with his guitarist, and he said that in the stadium gigs he'd kind of zone out and go onto autopilot, but when he was in these social club gigs, it felt really alive for him as an artist as well. And I think that's true for me. And of course, I'm just sick of Wembley Stadium and Madison Square Garden bothering me all the time, which is another
reason.
Yeah,
that's just because Liverpool are out of both of the FA Cups. If Jurgen Klopp's men was marching to the arch, you'd say Wembley's is for us, basically. But you've given up, you know. So that's the
given up on that.
You might, of course, be an Everton fan or indeed a Tranmere Rovers supporter, or actually hate all three. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a Liverpool fan myself.
Ah, yes, yes. Well, you know, there's always next year, as they keep on saying, and sometime this century.
Yeah.
You're still in touch with the Europa League, Alan. That's important. You've still got the Europa League. That's just
well, we're in Champions League places at the moment. I'm sure people don't want to hear me rabbit on about football. But I could do if you want.
You could play Dig Boys Dig on a regular basis. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself about micro gigs and Alan's work?
Yeah, no, I think that's a brilliant idea, because obviously, as you say, a lot of the time those at the back can't see you at the front, and you do lose that connection. I think sometimes when they have the stage coming out and there's a walkway, that's a bit better, because then obviously the artist can sort of sit in the middle of the crowd. But yeah, I think that's an absolutely
particularly if you're
idea.
Vertically challenged.
Yes,
you know, if you're a vertically
exactly.
challenged person, you just have to hop up and down and sort of jump or possibly climb on somebody's shoulders, and that's not going to work from that point of view. Just, I want to go and see Alan Parry. He's great. As a reminder, you can go, of course, to your website, Alan, which once again is?
Yeah, it's Parry Songs, because you spell Alan with an A-L-U-N, you see, and people can never find me if they Google. So it's parrysongs.co.uk, and all the information's there. As I say, I'm in your neck of the woods on the 1st of April at Sutton Music Group on Grassthorpe Road in Sutton-on-Trent. And Mania de Bohemian, who's like a gypsy jazz band, are also playing in a double header with me. So it should be a really, really good night, that.
It's going to be tremendous. And, of course, this is one of the trivia quirks from famous players for Liverpool back in the 1960s. There was an Alan Evans who was spelt the same way, A-L-U-N, as opposed to A-L-U-N.
Well, I'll tell you something. That's who I was named after, because I was born in the year when he was knocking in goals for us. So that's why it's called A-L-U-N.
Yeah, see, this is it. Your father didn't decide to name you after all of the players at that time. It's not Alan, Tommy, Emily, and all the rest of it, please, is it?
There are lads knocking about who've got names like that, but thankfully you stopped at Alan.
Exactly. It's fine. Natasha, last two questions for Alan Parry, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I really have enjoyed it. I wasn't sure what to expect, and I didn't realise there'd be so many people there, so it's been even. It's been like a micro gig all of our own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Aww.
That's wonderful. And can we expect to see you on the show anytime soon again?
Yes, will you return?
Yeah, well, the album is out on the 25th of March, so I'll make sure that a copy of that wings its way before the release. And if you wanna have me back once you've had a listen to all of the songs and maybe play a couple, that'd be fantastic.
I think that's a resounding yes from the Midweek Dive team in association with Manila PR and a whole range of other goodies. Alan Parry will return.
Thanks very much.
Alone. in the universe. I'm away from
Don't worry, you're never really alone in the universe as long as you've got the midweek drive with us. And you. Isn't that right, Ace director Graham Harper?
I wish I was Ace.
Oh, you've caught it now. Ace was played by Sophie Aldred in, of course, the Sylvester McCoy era of Doctor Who, and you didn't actually work on that. You did Peter Davison and Colin Baker.
Right, so, and I don't look like Ace, I hope.
No, I don't think so.
I don't mean that rudely. I mean, it means I'm a woman.
Gender realignment surgery is always on offer, Graham. We are in the 21st century, so who knows what could actually happen. And if you wish to actually do that shift, well, obviously we can work you through that process. perhaps not. Last week, of course, the 25th of January, you were connecting with another fine midweek driver. That was Rosemary Smith, because she'd booked you to actually take part in a Royal Television Society event, which are always great fun from that perspective. And I gather it all went splendidly.
It was absolutely fabulous, a lovely turnout of people. It was about 150, 200 people. I think 150 people. I think it was absolutely terrific in a bar. It sounds like we're having a great time.
You never have a great time with yourself, Graham. We know that. It's like going through purgatory. Exactly. Slightly inebriated. In a few weeks' time, of course, that would be March the 19th. You will be in Lincoln. And we'll hopefully have an equally wonderful experience as you take part in the Stone Tapes Fantasy TV Symposium, which is, you know, very exciting. And you also get a chance to meet in person once again two fine midweek drivettes who share calendar duties with you, because yourself, Natasha Armstrong and Tessa Snart are all in, of course, the 2017 calendar. Yeah. And, of course, Tessa, you may recall, joined us when we were doing the London location report back in November with Rosemary Smith.
I was just going to ask, is that the Rosemary?
Is, as opposed to Rosemary Langhorne, who's in Brighton, Rosemary, Mexico. It's easily confused. We don't know. We also have Kaylee Umfraville in the studio, who is a media production student.
Yes, I am.
Hello, Kaylee.
Hi.
And general all-round fine soul. And Natasha Armstrong, who has admitted today that she's been stalking you in Wikipedia. Technically, wiki stalking, Graham. Is that the case?
She's gone red and she's blushing.
Very excited. I mean, we'll sort this thing through, because quite clearly it does tie in with the department in terms of where people are, what they're doing, and so on and so forth. So, Graham, when we actually reveal the notion that Natasha is actually from Nottingham, and her jingle goes something along the lines of...
The road to becoming a midweek drivette can be the road less travelled. A bit like travelling from Nottingham to Lincoln in the middle of winter. Thank goodness Natasha Armstrong has stayed the course and earned her stripes as a midweek drivette for the 21st century.
And great intro.
Yeah, exactly. And clearly, Natasha, Robin Hood was also in the Nottingham area, except when he was shot in Budapest.
Yes!
It didn't look like... it was creepy, the forest we used, which was what was meant, so it was really good.
So... Natasha.
Yeah, I was just looking you up casually as I was...
She was doing her research, Graham. All right, she's doing her research. That's all.
Good.
I do it to everyone, Graham. It's okay. It's okay.
but you have to. You have to do your homework.
And, I just casually... I was looking up, actually, to do with some Doctor Who stuff, and I came across that you were involved in Robin Hood, and I just couldn't believe it, because I loved the series so much. It just meant... so much to me in my childhood.
It made her the woman you hear today, basically. A woman who's in her 20s now, effectively. So that's the kind of classical person that you've got, really.
I couldn't believe it. And I just wanted to know, well, start with, what was it like to work on the project, really?
As soon as I was offered to come out and do some episodes, I was thrilled to go to Hungary and shoot a British series. It was exciting to go to another country to do it and to do the job. What was weird was that there was no... I've forgotten his name. The religious guy.
The religious guy? No, Friar Tuck. Friar Tuck is what you're trying to say.
No,
the religious guy. It's all right. It's 24th century.
The first series I did, there was no Friar Tuck. And I said, you can't... How can you do Robin Hood without Friar Tuck? And guess what? Eventually they did, and they introduced Friar Tuck in another series brilliantly. So he was there, it was meant, but not at the beginning, and I found that really odd. And then we started, and it was just wonderful. You forget all of that and get on with it, with great cast.
A thing or two about loyalty, and my own personal favourite title, Peace Off. Peace, question mark, as in peace, obviously, P-E-A-S-C-E, Peace Off.
And that went very well with the Sheriff of Nottingham's character.
Exactly. Dead Man Walking, A Dangerous Deal, and The Enemy of My Enemy, according to the Robin Hood wiki that we see here.
I bet Keith Allen was great fun to work with.
I was really nervous to meet him, and when we did, boy, was it... Oh, he was fun. I found him a very clever, ingenious, and really collaborative. Really, he took direction and interest, you know, and ideas, and turned them, some of them, not all, but turned them into brilliance. So I thought he was really, really smashing to work with.
Oh, no, I'm dead jealous. I'm so jealous.
6 degrees of separation, or in Graham's case, 2 degrees of separation, when, of course, you know, you work through the March the 19th scenario.
Yes.
Exactly. Tessa, were you too young to remember Robin Hood, or was it a case of, no, I wasn't allowed to watch television?
No, I remember Robin Hood. In fact, I'm pretty sure in primary school we did a Robin Hood play. Because I remember the song, Robin of Locksley, you know, when they call me Robin Hood, that one.
Yeah. You see, I remember Robin Hood, riding through the glen, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
But that's not because I was around at the time, it's historical YouTubes, obviously, isn't that right, Graham? You know.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Kayleigh.
Yes.
Umfraville. And Robin Hood. You sound the surname, surely. I mean, your mum must have this notion of she thought she was marrying a Nottingham nobility. I mean, Umfraville. What's the origins of Umfraville?
It's from Normandy in France.
Mm-hmm.
It came over in 1066.
And did they say, where are you from? Umfraville. Oh, sorry.
It is a village in Normandy, so yeah.
I love the name. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
The last official time that the people from Europe invaded England. That's the last time, exactly. And they brought Kayleigh with us.
That's lovely. We sort of use Kayleigh in our seminar, you know, when we're talking about history.
She could come along. Kayleigh, you when you say use Kayleigh, I don't...
use her. Bring her along then. Bring her along and she can be an example.
I mean, so even there, you
use
know...
Use her. It's that was mean, wasn't it? That sounded mean.
And some sort of specimen from another course.
Okay, but I'll write you along.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like you put her on a pedestal and she spun round while you described her.
Funny enough, you could have always had a webcam in the studio there. That's exactly what we did, Graham. It's what happens. You know, it's 20 past six on a wonderful Wednesday, the 1st of February, as we actually head into our things. Natasha, any other questions or queries you've got for Graham, such as, should he actually go for the role of Doctor Who? I mean, he was a child actor, so why couldn't we have Graham Harper as the Doctor?
I don't see why not. I think he'd do a jolly good job.
Mm. Well, I think there'll be a lot of other people who think not.
Aww. Well, we would all vote for you.
Thank you. we're actually discussing earlier, weren't we, with Hannah, about the possibility of a female Doctor Who. What would you think about that?
It would depend who it was. You'd have to cast that person very carefully.
Joanna Lumley, perhaps.
I mean, the answer to that is yes, she would be a lot of fun, and I think it would be very, very... That's exactly what I mean. Mm. You need that quirky,
Dawn French,
fantastic kind of personality that sears through it all.
Dawn French is resonating, Kayleigh, obviously.
Yeah. Oh.
Dawn French is the Doctor.
She's already been a vicar, so she's got to be a doctor.
Why not?
Add that to her CV.
You can actually add it. You can also see the CV, take that Lenny. You know, it's all Lenny.
Yeah, I can't.
Never mind. Share with us what you were talking about at the Royal Television Society, though, Graham, because we sort of touched base on that and we didn't really get any further than you were getting slightly inebriated at the time, basically. So
we you I was.
I wasn't there. I don't know what was happening.
I wasn't getting inebriated. It was cups of tea. It was about prosthetics and computer-generated effects, etc. And what happened was, it was a stroke of luck, but Rosemary lost two of her CGI and prosthetic stars, if you like, because of work commitments. They couldn't make it. And so she rang me twice, 3 or 4 weeks before, and then a week or so before, to say, had I any ideas of anybody that I'd worked with we might be able to use? And I said, to be very honest, I can put you in touch with two people who are magnificent stars of both those areas. And she did, and they were free, and they came. And that was, I've now got to remember the names, Neil Gorton, who's Millennium Effects, I worked with him a lot on Doctor Who, because he created all of the aliens that I had, monsters. For the whole of Doctor Who. So anything that's strange and creepy and rushes around and or looks horrific or whatever, Neil Gorton would have had something to do with the design, big time, and was brilliant. And the other was Will Cohen, who was in charge of all the CGI work on Doctor Who throughout the period I was involved, which was 4 years. So they were magnificent because they, Will dealt with the new, no, Neil dealt with the new look Cybermen for the new series, as it were, and Will looked after all those fantastic effects and stars and three-dimensional effects that you require, people walking around, images of planets, etc. He was extraordinary. And so it was a very, very full-on, lively discussion about those areas.
As I knew it would be, you see, Graham.
And my part was, I'm a user, I'm one of those people, I'm a director who, my role is to visualise what I'm dreaming of. Hopefully the producers will love those ideas, and some they did and some they didn't. And then those guys, Neil and Will, turned our dreams, not mine, but all of our dreams, into reality. Of course, that then brought up, after all their stories and images and the showreels they had, just you knew you were in the presence of greatness, really. Not me, they. Oh. And I just told some funny stories that happened regarding some of those things. So it was really interesting. And the audience seemed, they all stayed the full time, and they seemed to really enjoy it.
Natasha, would you like to put those last two questions to Graham Harper, please? Because time again is just, we haven't even got into number nine, let alone talk about getting inside number nine. We haven't even done knock on the door, so go for it, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Absolutely. It's been very nice. Really interesting.
Wonderful. And can we expect to see you on the show soon?
Yes, if he rings me.
Oh, Graham, you're always on the list. Does. That's the important thing. Graham Harper will return very soon.
Yes, I will.
Be loved. officially Gisborough's premier midweek drive correspondent, supermum and quiz aficionado.
Oh, that would be Gemma Joy then, wouldn't it, Gemma?
I think it would.
Yeah, absolutely, more than that, heading into all sorts of marvellous things. And welcome back to the show for your first contribution of 2017.
It's a long time. Oh, it's only 4 weeks. No, it's fine.
Yeah, but, you know, life continues its own way. Now, Gemma, back in the day, not only did you have... A bit like Kaylee here. You see, Kaylee, when you actually came to Lincoln, you weren't expecting to find one of your former teachers actually ensconced in the persona of Ed Wellman, were you? No idea. No idea whatsoever. It was just one of those strange... Gemma had a similar experience with me, you see, because I'd taken her in her life at... Was it sixth form? It was Cleveland College of Further Education, I believe.
Yeah, it was like a sixth form. Yeah.
It was like a sixth form.
A very long time ago.
Very well, in the last century. We speak of the of the last century. I only say it because it's true, Gemma. That's it. We've been through so much together. As you know, I mean, you are one of the pioneer second wave of midweek drivettes. You know, in the studio here, we have folk who are in the infants class when we were doing programmes as a matter of course, really.
Yeah. So much industrial revolution, when man created fire, everything really.
Exactly. These are the things that... And now, of course, we have Natasha from Nottingham. We have Tessa from Glinton, little place just outside Peterborough. Perfectly formed. Much like Tessa. And Kaylee Amphreville as well, from the joys of Brentford. Is it Brentford?
Brentwood. It's close.
Easily sorted through from that, but a great shopping centre in any way, shape or form. That gives you one media production student and two journalism students, one in the second year, one in the third year. You, of course, were a communications graduate, and they seek advice. Because, Natasha, you were saying, and bless her heart, Natasha has brought her laptop along to have a tutorial with me after the show. It's great. I can juggle.
Yay, dissertation.
Yay, dissertation. I mean, Gemma, have you got any advice? I mean, as you know, since graduating, you've become a mum of two fabulous individual children and human beings, of course. It's not as though she gave birth to robots. And a whole variety of other sort of elements. She's one of the pharmaceutical industry's finest. She's generally an all-round fine person. But, Gemma, what advice would you give to this current generation?
In writing dissertations or in general?
I think, well, I don't know, you're up for either, really, Natasha.
Any life advice is good right now.
God, don't do what I did. general.
What did you do, Gemma?
What's the broadcast version? I think, in general, find something you love really, really quickly and just do it. And don't let anyone put you off and don't let anyone say, you can't do that. You're not the right type of person. Turn into that right type of person, because do you know what? That's really easy.
And that speaks a lady who's been on marathons with me and broadcast-a-thons and all sorts of other areas, but has yet to actually step across the threshold into the Siren Studios, because, of course, this is in Lincoln. And when Gemma was with the university, it was based in Hull.
Oh,
it's a shocker. Tessa, questions for Gemma.
Okay, well, in terms of, I don't know, as a journalism student then, what advice could you give to me, maybe, because I'm in my second year, so I won't graduate till third year, but would you suggest, like, I don't know, deciding what I want to do now, start looking now, so that you're prepared for that kind of last year?
Yeah,
and for any other students in the same sort of position as me.
And I think, I mean, to your point, obviously, if you're studying journalism, it'd be great to sort of specialise in something. And everybody's got things that they really enjoy on a personal level, or maybe it's a political interest or a social interest. So I would say sort of find out what you love and just try and pursue a career that offers you a little bit of that. Because I think that 20 years down the line, God, I sound like an old maid. I sound like someone from a Jane Austen. Someone from a Jane Austen film. I feel like I should be switching around in a crinoline, but I think find something that you love and something that you're passionate about, or something that you can make a difference in, because I think that 20 years down the line, if you haven't found that, I think that might be the regret. That's my personal regret, and I wish I'd been a bit more steadfast, and actually wish I'd applied myself more when I was at uni.
Well, you got a 2-1, Gemma, so, you know, in fact, from your father, but it's all... Now, I'm interested now in what we might well introduce as a new theme, which is Gemma rants, a sort of Gemma Joy rant about issues relating to education, because in her latest Facebook update,
Gemma Joy has actually talked about Poppy's school homework. Okay.
Oh,
okay. I mean, obviously, no names, please, Gemma. Obviously, it's Poppy's school. But would you like to share what we've actually got here? I mean, I see you're going to design a new spy gadget. You can get the crazier the better. What is this with respect to Poppy's school homework that now you have a chance of actually saying? I mean, actually, Natasha, would you actually just like to read Jenna's comments out there and just share with the world via the audio medium her Facebook post, which went up there?
This is Poppy's school homework. The teacher has written the instructions for the English homework. I repeat, English homework. I know it's pedantic, but really. Bring your A game, teacher.
Bring your A game, teacher. Teacher, leave those kids alone. Sorry.
Teacher has misspelled. Yes. Well, she hasn't misspelled. She's just used the wrong
Can you see the sentence there at the end? Bring your A game.
Oh!
That's shocking! No.
You are. Again, bring the jaws.
The jaws have dropped across the whole sort of era of the studio in so many ways.
Isn't it?
That's what parents have to cope with these days.
It is. And do you know, it's zero tolerance. I could have let that go, but I'm not going to. Because it starts there. It's like dropping a banana skin. It starts with that. It stops by Robin Lloyd's bank with a pair of tights on your head. Where will it end if we don't start at the zero tolerance it is? So I'm going to have to report it. Why? I feel a letter coming on.
And that is why, Gemma, you are the number one person who we are. Because, I mean, there are other Gemma Joys around there, but it's the top Gemma Joy that we are.
Exactly.
It's a lovely name. It's happy. It's a lovely name. I like it.
It's a happy, but she tells it like it is. You know, it's genius stuff. Much like Phil Leonis. it's karma in every sense of the word. Astoundingly, although it's been short, but nevertheless painstakingly sweet, we have to ask those last two questions because we've got Phil Linus in Los Angeles, all keen to promote the Los Angeles podcast breakfast show club thing and more. So Tessa, would you kindly do the business, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have.
And will you be joining us on the show again in the near future?
I'd love to.
Round of applause for Gemma Joy, please. And meanwhile, dedicated for the Oval Office. Probably quite enough in terms of the joys of the full chorus. It's not like Good Cop, Bad Cop in so many ways. Jeanette Olsen's version of Edelweiss. And then, of course, you know, I'm very tempted to actually play Tomorrow Belongs to Me. But, Phil, you might have thought that's just too much in keeping with the current political situation in the White House. So how are you, sir?
I feel this very introduction of me on the podcast is teaching me the survival skills you need for the 21st century in this information technology blizzard in which we live. I could not figure out how to turn off the player on my tablet listening to the show, which of course is on a delay. So I'm hearing the echoing of what has happened in the past. I've got my cat meowing incessantly about what needs to happen in the future. It's so hard to stay in the present, and yet I've made it, and I'm glad to be among friends.
And we're glad that you're among friends as well, actually. It's,
what a man in the High Castle moment it was for me, in fact. And I assume, since there are no such things in this universe as coincidences, there are merely coincidences. Mm-hmm. See what I did there? You picked the Edelweiss recording from Man in the High Castle because you know I am such a great fan of especially season one, less so season two, but looking forward to what I think will be the best ever season three.
There you go. Have you managed to access it as yet, Natasha?
Not yet. It's on the list with lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And I will get round to it, I promise, Phil.
Post-royal dissertation.
What an honour to be on that list. Really.
And so true, exactly. The sort of top 10 movies.
You know, just to be, you'll hear this in award season all the time. Just to be nominated, you're a winner. So really, just to make the list of things to watch, that's an accomplishment.
Exactly. Tessa?
No, I need to watch it too. Mm-hmm. I have not yet.
Tessa's still mourning the fact that season five of Nashville doesn't emerge until October.
Like October. I can't get it over here.
Wait a minute. So that show's been cancelled, but does that mean that means that it gets released on a delay there? Is that what I understand?
Yeah, season four is just finished. Just before Christmas, I think it was. So we don't actually see the new series till like October, September time.
Amazon Prime.
Have you had the chance to talk to Cameron Tilbury about the show?
Yeah, I did actually, just about an hour or two ago. Yeah.
And I mean, I missed it. I never get to hear Camo talk about it, but it was fascinating being able to drive along with him. He gave me a tour of so much of the city of Nashville, but it was funny, and I can relate to this here in Los Angeles, where of course so many movies and shows have been made, but how occasionally there will be something that comes along that at first you go, oh, hey, this is great, it's really celebrating this area, and then all the tourists flock to the places that are shown on it, and suddenly places you loved going are lost to you because you can't deal with the crowds anymore. And so it was interesting, even in the early morning hours, there were places we couldn't get into. He goes, oh, well, I would have loved to have taken you there if there weren't 50,000 fans lined up.
Goodness.
Because, you know, anyway, it was kind of amusing.
It's the awesome power of the media, as Kaylee Umfraville will actually confirm. Kaylee, it's your first solo show without Holly, of course.
I know.
She's only a few yards away, but she's in a different building, so it might as well be an eternity away, watching short films made by other wannabe directors.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But the important thing is, not only has Phil got the Chilpack Hollywood podcast there, but also he's pleased to announce the first episode of a brand new podcast, which I have indeed shared, entitled The Los Angeles Breakfast Club On the Air. On the air.
I need to hear this.
Exactly.
Yeah, we all do.
Poked us up in every sense. Well, sort of accessing in every way. In fact, once again, Natasha, would you like to read the sort of authentic description of On the Air, assuming we can actually work through that? There we are. Sort of details. A little bio for Phil Leonis. So, in case he's forgotten who he is, we'll now remind Phil who he is and develop that and therefore validate himself.
Founded in 1925 by business leaders, entertainment figures and politicians, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club is a weekly gathering place for those seeking camaraderie and those who love the history and culture of Los Angeles. A tribute to the days of yesteryear when the LABC was a fixture on the radio. On the Air will be a monthly review and preview of happenings at the Democracy of Ham and Eggs, hosted by podcast veteran Phil Leonis, co-host and co-producer of Your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and a weekly US cultural correspondent to the UK's
It's gone. It's vanished.
Advert popped up.
Just we were just getting there, and suddenly an advert emerged. Carry on, Natasha.
Weekly US cultural correspondent to the UK's Midweek Drive programme on Siren FM and Southside Broadcasting.
Don't you just hate it when those adverts just pop up in the midst of a script?
You know why I hated it? You know why I hated it was I was going to use that recitation to start next month's episode of that podcast.
I'm so sorry, Phil.
You'll have to do it again.
Yeah. It's live radio. Think of it as a Jean-Luc Godard moment. Would you like to take it one more time, Natasha?
Okay.
Yeah. Take it number two. This time with
feeling. No. We could edit it, right? We could edit that little bit out. Alex, when I say we, I mean you when you put together the podcast of your show.
All right, Phil, for yourself and Natasha, that's what we'll do. There are times when I feel that actually part of Chilli Pack Hollywood could have another spin-off podcast called the Pop Cloggers Association, or the Pop Cloggers, or the Clog Poppers scenario, insofar as popping one's clogs seems to be something more and more celebrities are actually doing these days. It's a northern euphemism.
That sounds filthy and does not sound appropriate for a family audience. before we leave
Just hold it there, Phil. Natasha, if I say so-and-so's popped their clogs, what am I effectively saying?
Unfortunately, they've passed their sell-by date and they've gone.
They've moved to the next year. They've passed on.
I am too young to hear that kind of language, so...
Well, I thought we'd give a bit more zim, a bit more viz, you know, Mary Tyler Moore, pop clockers, you know, pop poppers.
Criticize the whole
thing. See, that's inappropriate. Okay. Now you're just, you turned it into a somber occasion, Alex. You took a magical day and turned it into a... before we leave the fair confines, though, of the Shrine of Friendship at Friendship Auditorium and the Los Angeles Breakfast Club... I would like to share two little tidbits with you. One, there apparently is already going to be a review published about the podcast. Someone wrote to me, and I was really excited. It's a very, very nice message, but the message got split up, and they described it as basically the genetic history of radio and podcasting in the making. But their message got split into two, so the word genetic ends one text with genet, G-E-N-E-T, and I thought they were comparing me to the legendary playwright Jean Genet. So I was so thrilled, like I'm up there with geniuses, but no, it's not that good. So that's a little funny thing about me blowing smoke up myself. The other thing, though, I wanted to mention, apropos of the Midweek Drive and the Los Angeles Breakfast Club and our unique transatlantic relationship, on February 15th, Alex, when you want to record a certain interview with me about the movie The Searchers, I will be entertaining at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club an entire... what would we call it? Diplomatic? What do you call it? A group of diplomats? I don't know. A diplomatic cortege? I'm making up words now. But a group of people from your fair shores that includes David J. Howe and Sam Stone. And so I had thought, though it's going to be either or, Alex, and nobody within the sound of our voice loves hearing anything more than a production meeting on the air. Whether you would like to connect with us round table style during my usual spot here in Los Angeles, or whether you want me to be prepared to do the interview about The Searchers.
I think we'll go for the former, obviously. I think we'll connect, we'll share that. I feel it wouldn't be a right in this special relationship to do otherwise.
Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be great fun? So I will figure out a way where we can do it and we can all be a part of that.
Would you like the Midweek Drivettes as well?
Well, of course. It's your team and the members of your team over here.
One of the Midweek Drivettes is convinced Sam Stone is indeed Christina Aguilera after a time machine.
She does look like her.
So bear in mind, lots of Christina Aguilera lines and quotes and things will obviously be there.
I will find a picture of Christina Aguilera where she looks
just like Sam Stone.
Do you know what's fun about that as a segue back to the Breakfast Club is today's speaker was all about Jay Ward Productions, the wonderful animation company that created, among other things, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Oh, really?
Who would travel back in time in their time machine, in their way back machine, to learn about the reincarnation of Christina Aguilera. Who's technically still with us, so I think I used that word wrong, too. In the not short list of words I'm using incorrectly today.
And Kaylee, of course, your first ever show was indeed with Sam Stone and David J. Howe. So it's all connecting, isn't it? That's all the thing. And Kaylee's mother
is... You know what they say? You never forget your first show with Sam Stone and David J. Howe.
Exactly. No, I did not know that.
Exactly.
You really popped your clogs on that show. I don't know. No. See, I don't have the hang of it.
I don't think that's quite how the expressions.
Yeah, it's an interesting line, but yeah, we'd probably say no, they haven't quite. It's that tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Let's call the whole thing off.
But as a good American, I'm going to build a wall around my usage of the word so that no one else's usage can interfere with that.
And we will support you in that special. In fact, I'll even reach out and hold your hand should you fall. But then, obviously, if you wanted to wash your hands, it would be a different line entirely. There are so many things. And we should be grateful to the voting members of the American population for giving us comedy value, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah, boy, that... You know what? I have a feeling that no matter who gets elected these days, there's going to be plenty of comedy material. We don't have to worry about that. But it was fun learning, apropos of so much of the discussion in America about this wall and about losing jobs to Mexico and being flooded by illegal immigrants from Mexico and all this talk. That when Jay Ward Productions was making these shows, Mr. Peabody and Sherman and Rocky and Bullwinkle and George of the Jungle, their budgets that they were given were so minuscule that the work was done at a studio in Mexico City. But because of Mexico's protectionist policies, you could only use art supplies that were manufactured in Mexico at the time. And they couldn't actually get the kind of paints and colors that were needed to produce the work. So in a reverse kind of illegal immigration, runners and production assistants from Jay Ward Productions would have to pack full station wagons like they were on vacation and hide art supplies and bring it to the artists in Mexico City. They were it was like some Cold War espionage saga where what they're smuggling in is art supplies to be able to make cartoons for people to enjoy around the world.
It's a strange world. And at 12:30 Los Angeles time, Phil Leonis's cat, Fez Aldrin, will actually get a name check on Siren FM.
I was going to say, what is his name?
I think that just happened.
Well, we were talking about it on the show earlier.
You must be a Japanese ambassador. Are you Mr. Trade Secretary there? It was transferred to various other things. No, he didn't make the top five list. A reminder, of course, the top five of the nation's oddest named cats, admittedly in the UK, Shadow Kevin, Captain Cisco, Spanker, Sky Bizzle for Shizzle Bear, and Del Boy Aruni. Apart from the winner, of course, who was called Tink.
Phil's cat should have.
Yeah, I mentioned it. I did mention it. All right, so it's there. I put it out there.
Well, but it's unusual. What's the distinction? It's the top five.
Yeah, has Fuzz Aldrin as yet woken her owners to raise the alarm as a fire engulfed the family home? I don't think so. I don't think Fuzz has quite got... Not in this lifetime, anyway.
How did you come up with the name? That's quite
brilliant.
Well,
first of all, you know why Fuzz doesn't do that? Because Fuzz is too busy putting out the fire to keep everybody safe. This cat has a lot of work to do. So, Fuzz Aldrin, I did not come up with the name. The name was given to Fuzz by the woman who was nursing her back to health. I've told the story before, but Fuzz was abandoned in a box with an entire litter of kittens on the Las Vegas Strip in the middle of August. Which you would do. You would set out a box of newborn kittens in 120-degree weather for people to adopt. And so the box was found, a box full of dead kittens. And in the process of disposing of this box, there was a little bit of movement. One of the kittens had somehow survived. This was the kitten that would become known as Fuzz Aldrin. And so the woman who was given this kitten to try to nurse back to health, who actually was a nurse of geriatric Patrick cats. That was her living. She decided that this little cat needed a bold name, something to aspire to, something adventurous, something about mankind and humanity striving to do what had never been done before, and so gave the name Fuzz Aldrin, not realizing, because this tiny, emaciated little being didn't really even look like a cat at that point, did not realize that Fuzz was a she. So therefore, people often, because of the reference to Buzz Aldrin, think Fuzz is a she, which amusingly is a mistake that nurses at the veterinary hospital we once had to take Fuzz to made, which made me not happy. And I snapped at them, if you can't even tell what gender this cat is, how can I trust you to take care of her medical needs? But anyway, that's how Fuzz got the name, and this this nurse of geriatric cats eventually moved in next door to me, and when Fuzz was just about a year old, the nurse had an opportunity to move to Yosemite to care for animals, and Fuzz is a little too small to be an outdoor cat. Basically a squirrel would be able to handle Fuzz in a fight, I think. So I asked, well, what's going to happen to Fuzz? And before I got the question out, I was crying. And so we both kind of knew the answer of what was going to happen to Fuzz. And Fuzz had chosen me already. Fuzz, I had wondered what animal had been clawing holes into my window screens and what animal had been digging up my cactus outside. And it was Fuzz Aldrin trying to get my attention.
Fuzz Aldrin is beautiful.
We've been looking at Fuzz pictures on Facebook whilst you've been speaking, Phil.
That's what we...
It's been quite emotional. Kaylee, number between 2 and 26, please.
5.
5. Mm. Oh, okay, 5.
Before this odyssey ever began, there was you, your best friends, and wide-eyed curiosity among you about who would be the first to leap, the first to forget, the first to kiss, the first to tell, the first to fall, the first to get back up, and the first to remember that it all began with a dare to love in spite of it all. Is that you, Murgatroyd? I remember the glint in your eyes, all three of them, the universe.
Murgatroyd's out there. Next
one. That's the question, is how did the universe get a friend named Murgatroyd? That's the question for next week.
Which we'll be talking together with a violinist who plays Metallica on the violin. We'll be having probably Sam Stone and David Gerhau in the studio.
Yeah.
And we've also got the delights of another brand spanking the new musical artist recording as well with us. So it's all great stuff. Last two questions for Phil Dearness, please. Kaylee Umfraville.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link today?
I've had so much fun. When do we start?
And will you be joining us soon?
I have nowhere else to go. I'll be back a week from now.
Exactly. Meanwhile, on Siren, the adventure continues with Michael's musical madness. That would be Michael Barwise, a kind of precursor and warm-up act for the poetry program, which, of course, I never can quite remember the name of. But it's wonderful. It's got Chris Clarkson in there. It's not called Poetry, Please. It's called Something to Do with Poetry. Actually, it's not anything to do with poetry whatsoever. You can tell I've worked on this script for a good time. Anyway, Michael's Musical Madness, Midweek Musical Madness, is up very shortly. To the team, to Hannah Brown, to Tessa Snott, to Natasha Armstrong, and to Kaylee Emfraville, and Cameron from Nashville, Anna Lewis, well, she'll be back with us next week, hopefully. William Coles, Alan Perry, Graham Harper, Gemma Joy, and Phil Linus. Thank you, dear listener. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye!
Bye!